the most prominent waterways in the United States is the Mississippi River. For thousands of years, it was used by generations from all different cultures. The Cheyenne, Sioux, and Potawatomi, along with other tribes, used this as their primary trade route for hundreds of years. It helped them to spread their cultures and stories throughout North America. The Spanish, the British, and the French also utilized it while navigating the continent, exploring, and finding different passages and areas to settle. Since the United States' inception, it's featured as a prominent part of our history and culture. It's provided routes for travelers, traders, and industry. There are few other waterways in the world that are steeped in as much history and significance as the Mississippi. The river isn't the only thing to hold the name meaning Big River, though. This week, we're going to visit a state that is loaded with history, both dark and bright. A state that not only has a large river flowing through it, but is the home of blues music and a whole slate of recognizable names like Elvis Presley and Oprah Winfrey. For this week's podcast, we explore the legends and lore of the Magnolia State, Mississippi. What happens when something occurs that we can't explain? Something that we don't understand? Something that affects us in a visceral way that we can't find the words to explain or the emotions to cope with? Both of our stories this week involve events that can't be explained away very easily. There are many that have tried, but survivors of these specific stories have been changed, right down to the very core of who they are. They're different.
Hovering there, about 30 feet long, 8 or 10 feet high, shaped like a football, more blunt at one end with a small dome-like structure on top. Something up toward the top at one end resembled two windows. It was fascinating. It seemed to hold me spellbound.
October 11th, 1973. A warm, autumn evening near the town of Pascagoula, Mississippi in Jackson County. 42-year-old Charles Hickson, a foreman at a local shipyard, and 19-year-old Calvin Parker just put in a full day of work on the docks. Both men enjoyed fishing quite a bit, so it made sense that after a long, warm fall day, they decided there was no better way to wind down. The elder Hickson suggested that they go somewhere nearby to a place that he frequented. It was an old, abandoned shipyard. The two men grabbed their gear and headed that way. They came to the spot along the Pascagoula River and set up for an evening of fishing. The men cast out and spent some time out on the river, getting bite after bite, but not catching anything to write home about. The younger fisherman grew impatient and suggested to Charles that they might find a new location. This was a spot that Charles frequented, though, and he just shrugged it off. The younger decided to go along with the decision, and he moved from his spot along the side of the river, and he went to get some more bait. At that moment, however, the two men went from the fisherman to the catch of the day.
It looked to me like air, or steam, or something escaping from a pipe.
As the two men stood there, they heard a loud, high-pitched noise. They dropped their fishing poles and looked up to see a cloud of steam appear behind them. The craft hovered above the ground a matter of feet away. Two flashing blue lights strobed from around it. The two men didn't know what to make of it at first. Parker has since mentioned that their first instinct was that it may have been a local police officer. He thought they were coming to ask him maybe why they were trespassing on this private property. But it wasn't the police. Instead, as the two men stood there, they saw a door open on the front of the hovering craft. A large white beam came from the craft, blinding the two men. But the light wasn't the only thing that came out of that open hatch from within that craft.
They appeared to me that they had something like elephant skin. It was very wrinkled. These things came to us and took a hold of me. One took a hold of Calvin. We went into that beam of light, and they carried me aboard that craft.
From inside the UFO came three creatures. They were described as being somewhere between 5 and 6 feet tall. They seemed to be robotic in nature. Charles Hickson described their skin to be metallic looking, but rather than a simple shiny metal, it was similar to that of elephant skin. Instead of shining, it was much more matte than one might expect. They had no necks. Rather, their heads seemed to look like a helmet affixed to a static body that had no joints on it. The helmets were large. They had pointed protrusions replacing the ears and the nose. They had simple slits for where their eyes and their mouth would be. The legs were straight and unjointed. They were attached to the oblong-shaped body and seemed to be there just more like pedestals holding up the torso. The creatures didn't walk. They simply floated upon the ground, gliding towards the two men. Unlike the rest of their bodies, these creatures' arms moved almost normally. Something that the men noticed was that at the end of each arm, instead of fingers, there seemed to be claws. After the craft had landed and the beings had come out, the two men from Mississippi were frozen. Not in fear, but rather, just unable to move. They weren't able to move as the creatures approached and ended up seizing the two men. The next thing both men remember was being on the craft, standing there, facing their captors. From the wall came what Charles Hickson described as a giant eye. It looked over the men from top to bottom, front and back. Calvin Parker remembered it slightly differently. Not in what happened, but just in his memory. He said that along with the eye, there was a being. To him, the eye seemed more like a tool than an actual creature or intelligent life. The being that was with this tool, Parker remembered as being a female. Or at least that's what he thought. The being was similar to a human, with the only real difference being the size of her fingers. He noted that her middle finger was much longer than that of a human being.
Then she took a finger and ran it down my throat. Tried to come up through my nasal cavities. And that's when I started trying to come back too.
And come back the two gentlemen did. After what the two men guessed was about 30 minutes, they were returned to the same spot in which they were taken. The men returned to their truck where they sat, stunned, in silence. Charles Hickson reached into his glove compartment and pulled out a bottle of whiskey. He proceeded to take drink after drink in hopes of helping to regain his composure. After some deliberation, the two men went for help. They went to the local sheriff's office and told them what had happened. Of course, the story seemed very far-fetched. The sheriff's deputies left the two men sitting in the interview room by themselves. What the two men didn't know was that the deputies had secretly left a tape recorder sitting inside of a desk to see if they could catch the men in a lie. They couldn't. The men talked about how scared they were and didn't deviate in their story at all. This is a tale that some believe and some don't. It's impossible to prove, as it's no more than a story that two men have told about an experience that they had. They have no real evidence. There's no pictures, no recordings, nothing. It's very anecdotal at this point. But the two men do have something on their side. The same night, nearby to where these two men had their experience, two separate parties had their own encounters. On State Route US 90, between Biloxi and Pascagoula, Joey Nelson and three friends were driving, heading towards New Orleans. While driving, they saw something in the sky. In front of their car appeared a bright ball of light. The light emitted a loud, clicking and grinding noise, similar to what Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker had reported during their experience. Then, from the bright light emerged another light, a secondary light, a smaller light, about the size of a beach ball. The smaller light moved closer to the car, and the kids in it just watched, completely mesmerized. The description is very similar to what Parker and Hickson seem to have seen. Interestingly enough, these two occurrences weren't the only two that night either. About 300 miles north of Pascagoula, in the town of Bruce, Mississippi, a woman named Rosie Nell saw something similar. It was a larger ball of light with another, smaller one dancing through the sky near her Mississippi home. No one can know for sure what Calvin Parker and Charles Hickson saw that night back in 1973. They had an experience that left a mark on them like nothing else in or from this world could. Charles Hickson took the feelings he experienced on that October night to his grave. And Calvin Parker still talks about that night to this very day. What else could it have been, though? Different theories have emerged after the event, ranging from top-secret government experiments to the old reliable swamp gas and alcohol. All we do know is that two men had their lives turned upside down. They know what they saw, and that's good enough for them. Not everything that terrorized towns throughout Mississippi, though, are extraterrestrial. Some were of this world. Whether they believe they existed on this plane or a more supernatural one. Our next friend resided somewhere between the two. In a cemetery in Yazoo County, Mississippi, there is a grave. The grave is marked by a large headstone lying in pieces on the ground. Around the broken slab is a large, thick chain that is notably broken in many pieces. Within the grave lies the remains of something dark. Rather, someone dark. Within the broken chain and beneath the cracked marble lies the Witch of Yazoo. In the late 1800s, the South was an interesting place. Since the Civil War had ended, the Reconstruction slowly made its way west. Some of the states had received aid and were on their way to being rebuilt, but this didn't touch everyone. The South became an area for social outcasts to go. There was still a lot of undeveloped land and dense woods, which made it easy to disappear and live your life without the public eye glaring at you. And in the backwoods of Mississippi, a woman did just that. She lived out in the swamp in a small cabin near the Yazoo River, which was known to local fishermen for being a bountiful area. The location, however, kept these waters fairly secluded. There was something about the area that just didn't feel right. The woman in this cabin preyed on that feeling of uneasiness. When encountering fishermen out near the river, she would befriend them, and ultimately she would invite them back to her cabin. Unfortunately for these men, it would be the last experience that they ever had. In the fall of 1884, a young boy named Joe Bob Duggett was walking out near the Yazoo River. He was near the woman's cabin when suddenly he heard a blood-curdling scream. The boy was concerned as to what was happening, so he ran to the cabin to peer inside and see if he could be of any help. Unfortunately for him, What he saw would be indelibly seared into his brain forever. On the floor, in a puddle of blood, lay two bodies. They were completely lifeless. The boy looked up from where the bodies were, and he saw the woman that lived in the cabin dancing around the deceased two men. She was waving her hands and chanting as she pranced around the small cabin. Terrified, the boy ran home as fast as he could. He met his father when he made it home and told him what he had seen. Realizing what his son had witnessed, the duo rushed into town to find and alert the sheriff. Once told, the sheriff grabbed his deputy and immediately went to where the old woman's cabin was. When they arrived, they found no woman there as the cabin stood empty. But behind the cabin stood a shed. The sheriff looked inside the shed to see if the woman may have been hiding out in there, but she wasn't. Instead, he found the skeletons of two people strung up by the hands to the rafters. At that point, the woman appeared and made her escape. She fled into the nearby swamp with the sheriff and his deputy in tow. As she made her way through the swamp, she ended up being caught in a pit of quicksand. She writhed and struggled to free herself, but sank faster with every second. The sheriff and his deputy reached the woman, but she was too far gone to save. When she saw the men, as she sank, she yelled something at them. "In 20 years, I will return and burn this town to the ground." The men watched as she disappeared and perished in the quicksand. At some point after this, a group of people came and retrieved the now identified witch's body from the pit. They pulled her out and brought her to the Glenwood Cemetery, where they buried her. Around the grave, they put a thick, heavy chain to keep the witch locked into place. Time went on after that day, and many people paid it no mind. That was until the afternoon of May 25th, 1904, 20 years after the witch perished in the swamp. On that day, May 25th, 1904, a young woman and her fiancé were to be wed. During the course of the day, this young woman was busy preparing for her wedding. She was baking delicious food in the kitchen and preparing their home for the post-wedding celebration. At some time in the afternoon, however, her day went from joyous to terrible. In the parlor of her home, a candle somehow caught something on fire. Whether it was the drapes or a rug, no one knows for sure. What they do know is that this fire quickly spread throughout the entire town. Flames moved from house to house, causing widespread havoc. By the time the flames were extinguished, over 200 residences and almost every business in Yazoo City had burned. 324 buildings in all were destroyed. Many people believed that this was simply an accident. But witnesses through Yazoo City said that as the fire spread, it seemed to jump and dance through the sky. It was as if the flames were being driven by some sort of supernatural force, as the weather in that area was usually very calm. A few people realized this, and they remembered the threat from the old witch 20 years prior. They made their way to the cemetery to find that the chains that surrounded the witch's grave had been broken. She had lived up to her word and destroyed the town of Yazoo City 20 years after she had perished. No one knows the identity of the Witch of Yazoo for certain. No one knows who is buried in the witch's grave. Truth be told, this may be no more than just legend. A story passed through generations and just told on May 25th during a walking tour inside Glenwood Cemetery. However, there are some thoughts on how this story came to be and whether or not there is even any shred of truth to it. One of the more prominent theories includes a woman named Harriet N. Pruitt. Ms. Pruitt holds a very historic place in American history, as she was one of the first female news editors. She was a very outspoken woman who at the time had some very strong political beliefs. During this point in history in the United States, if you had an issue with something published by a newsman, you had the right to challenge that person to a pistol duel. Women, however, were exempt from this rule. Miss Pruitt took full advantage and posted her unfiltered opinion with almost no repercussions. The men of Yazoo did take exception to some of her more political opinions, so it's thought that perhaps in order to tarnish her image, they spread stories about her being a witch. Add to the fact that she was a widow and lived in a small cabin on the outskirts of town in 1884, and you have a recipe for a legend. Another potential explanation revolves around the racial tensions of the time. Even though the town of Yazoo City was predominantly populated by African American residents, they still weren't afforded the same luxuries as their Caucasian counterparts. On Christmas Eve in 1884, a white plantation owner named T.D. Kirk was insulted by an African American worker named Abe Johnson. After their verbal altercation, both men went to get some friends and weapons. When the men returned, a large fight erupted, leaving four men dead, including Kirk. A few days later, an angry mob attacked the prison where the surviving men were being held, and all four of the living prisoners were killed. Some believe that the Witch of Yazoo was simply created out of circumstance to try and distract the town from the racial explosion that had just happened. No one knows the true origin of the Witch of Yazoo. There is no record of men being abducted or a woman dying in quicksand at that time. But that doesn't mean there isn't truth to the story. We don't know who's buried in the grave of the Witch of Yazoo. We do know that the legend, however, will live on in Willie Morris's book, Good Old Boy and the Witch of Yazoo, as well as through stories shared every May 25th at the Glenwood Cemetery. And with that, another journey ends. We say goodbye to the Magnolia State and again, journey elsewhere. Until then, though, as always, make sure that you check out our podcast family, the Straight Up Strange Podcast Network. There are many different podcasts available to listen to on the network to tide you over until our next episode. There's plenty ranging from history to true crime to other obscure tales that will most definitely hold your interest. Head to straightupstrange.com or follow us at StrangePods on Twitter to find podcast links and see what else we have to offer. Also, make sure that you give the Monsters and Friends podcast a follow on Twitter. I love hearing from all of you and hearing your suggestions, or I really enjoy when you tell me how wonderful I am as well. Haha, thanks. You can find us on Twitter at MNFPod or on Instagram at Monsters and Friends, or feel free to search Facebook and give us a like. While you're at it, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can get new episodes as soon as they come out. Plus, it helps us to move up the charts so that we can keep on spreading the good word to the masses. And if you're bored, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review too. Your feedback is always most helpful. You can find the Monsters and Friends podcast on almost any podcast platform. If you don't find it, give me a call and I'll see what I can do. I can't thank you all enough for listening to the podcast and being such amazing supporters. Thank you so much for visiting today, and we'll chat again real soon.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.